Now we read together in 2 Timothy 2. Let's return there now. 2 Timothy 2. Sorry, 2 Timothy 4. 2 Timothy 4. And we're going to read again verse 10. Verse 9 and 10. 2 Timothy 4, verse 9 and 10. Paul says, from the prison, the Mamertine prison in Rome, not a nice place to be. Do your best to come to me quickly, he says to Timothy. For Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. And others have gone away as well. But Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. So I'm going to preach on commitment today. What's yours like? Your commitment to Jesus Christ. We can measure a lot about people these days. We can measure blood pressure, your heart rate. We can measure your cholesterol count, your blood count, and all the rest of it. What if there was a little gauge that we could put on people to measure their commitment to Jesus? And what if we put that gauge on you as you came into church every Sunday morning? Your commitment to Jesus gauge, and we measured how committed you were to following Jesus. What percentage of commitment you had to Jesus. What do you think the reading would be for yourself? I wonder what the reading would be for myself. Of course, there isn't a gauge, but you can still measure your commitment fairly accurately. You can look at how committed you are to things like seeking God. Like, do you pray? Do you pray consistently? Do you pray throughout the day? Do you want to know God? Do you read His Word? Do you read it every day? Do you seek not only to read it, but to hear what it's saying for your life? Do you love Christians? Do you love to be with other Christians? Do you love to fellowship with them? Do you love to take whatever opportunity, whether it's a cup of tea in the hall after the service, or whether it's calling round to your Christian friend? Do you love to be in Christian fellowship? Do you support what the church is doing? Not just coming to a service on Sunday, do you come maybe on Sunday evening as well? Because you want to be in a place where you want to support the church, which is people. You want to support other people who love Jesus, and you want to hear more about Him and be strengthened in your faith. Do you come to pray at the prayer meetings? I have to say I've been very disappointed recently at attendance, not only in a regular midweek meeting, but particularly at things like the youth meeting. Last week we had the prayer meeting for youth, and the attendance from all the churches locally was pitiful. Dave Mockett works very hard in the schools on behalf of our young people. He's exceptionally committed to their spiritual well-being, and yet only a few folk from all the churches in Lahash managed to actually come to support that work at the meeting. Missionaries coming from other parts of the world, people who work in dangerous situations, who've given their lives in sacrifice to God, come and speak in our hall, and sometimes it's embarrassing how few people come to listen. And you could be there maybe, but you're not. They are so committed, and yet you clearly are not. Of course, some of you have legitimate reasons. You have your families to look after, or your work, or whatever. But that's not always the case. You can measure your commitment by simple things like that. I could carry on that theme. Does Jesus lack commitment to you? Of course he doesn't. He endured, says the writer of the Hebrews, the opposition of evil men against him. He endured the scourging and the shame of the cross. and he endured temptations beyond bounds. And at this moment, he intercedes and prays on behalf of his church in heaven, still bearing the marks of his crucifixion for us. He is not lacking in commitment to us. If we do love him, it is only because he first loved us. So I want to think today about commitment, and I'm going to look at this fellow Demas. And he can teach us a few things about how not to be committed, or how to be not committed to Jesus. Who's Demas, this fellow in verse 10 of 2 Timothy 4? Well, he appears in a couple of other places. He appears in Colossians chapter 4 and in Philemon, verse 24, as a man who works with Paul. This is about 4 years before this time of this letter being written, 4 years before Demas greets the churches along with Paul. Demas is described by Paul as his fellow worker. So he's committed. He's committed at that point to following Jesus. But 4 years later from that, here, during Paul's second imprisonment in Rome, Paul writes, verse 10, he has deserted me, he says, because he loved this present world. So what's happened to Demas? Well, his commitment has dropped away. Has he become an apostate? Has he abandoned the faith? Well, probably not, because there's a few other folk who have also deserted. In verse 16, when Paul was up in court in Rome, everyone deserted him, he said. May it not be held against him. Paul's not saying that they've not become Christians. It's the same word there, deserted, as in verse 10. It looks like Demas is probably away to the church of Thessalonica, but the point is, Paul is saying there are reasons why he's dropped his commitment. He's dropped his commitment to me as an apostle of Jesus Christ and to Jesus. There's a cooling. Now, every one of us knows that in our relationships, things can cool. We can cool down in our relationship with our wives or our husbands or our friends or our family. Brothers or sisters, there can be a cooling for all sorts of reasons. And there's been a cooling in Demas's life for whatever reason. Paul, in fact, tells us the reason here. So, what is the temperature of your commitment to Jesus, the temperature of your love for Jesus today? Is it really hot, boiling hot, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord? Or is it tepid? Is it lukewarm? Is it cold? There can be a cooling off of commitment to Jesus. Now, what we're going to see in Demas here is an example of that. And I want to think about four things, just quickly, that we can learn from him about how not to be committed. We can learn, first of all, to aspire to be like the most committed Christians that you know. That's the first thing. And this is what God's saying to us this morning. He's saying to you, aspire. Have you got aspirations in your life this morning? Or things you think, I want to be better at that. Well, let this be one of your aspirations. I want to be more like the best Christians that I see around me. There are in this church and in the community some very passionate Christians. And they are known not by their words, not by their talk. They are known by their deeds. They show by their deeds, by their commitment, their love for Jesus. Aspire to be like them. Demas, sadly, has lost them. Paul is the best example to follow on the earth at this time, probably. He is probably the most Christ-like man. Demas decides not to stay with them anymore. Demas decides not to aspire to try and follow Jesus like Paul. Remember, this is the man, Paul, who can write, follow me as I follow Jesus. He's that close to Jesus. So aspire to be like him. But Demas has lost that aspiration. Let me ask a searching question. Are you leaving those who are more committed to Jesus to get on with it in the church? Are you leaving those who are more committed to Jesus than yourself to get on with it? Demas did that. He did that in Rome when he left Paul in prison to get on with it. Being a member of the church is about not leaving people to get on with it, but getting on with it yourself. If you're a member in the Church of Jesus Christ, that should really mean something. Now, being a member is not about do's and don'ts. It's not about what you do or you don't do on Sunday. That is not what it's about at all. Being a member is about love. Now, what is love? Love is not feeling. Love is an act of will. Love is a determination and choice to do the right thing, no matter how you feel about the right thing. When you're in a marriage relationship, you won't always have the feeling. You may have it at the honeymoon and for a period afterwards, but that's not love. Love is when there's no feeling, but you keep on doing the right thing in your relationship. It's the same with commitment to Jesus and membership in the church. So sometimes you don't feel like reading the Bible every day, but you do it. Sometimes you don't feel like praying faithfully for missionaries somewhere else, or praying faithfully for your neighbour or whatever, but you do it. Sometimes you don't feel like getting out of bed on Sunday morning to be with other Christians, and again on Sunday evening, and again at the prayer meeting, but you do it because you are committed in love. And it's not just that you feel, although hopefully you will have great feelings at times for Jesus and a great surge of joy and the knowledge of him, but you do it anyway because it's an act of will. That's membership in the church. You do the right thing however you feel. You might not feel like getting up a bit earlier so you can give someone a lift to church, or so you can volunteer to help in the food bank, or so that you can talk to someone in a friendly way that you wouldn't normally talk to, or endure the possible embarrassment of getting it wrong when you're trying to tell someone about Jesus. You do it because you aspire to be like the best Christians that you know. You do it. Demas lost that aspiration, and that's something we must not do. We aspire to love like Paul. Second thing is, we dare to follow when it's challenging. We dare to follow. Demas needed more courage. Paul was in prison, and as a man in prison, it was dangerous to be associated with him. He was on a charge, and he had already faced his first round of questioning, what he calls in verse 16 his first defence. And he says, no one came to my support. Everyone deserted me. The Christians were running scared. Why? Well, because Nero was the emperor in Rome, and Nero was mad. He, of course, was blamed for the great fire in Rome in 64 AD, and it's just a little bit after that Paul's here in prison, and Nero is making a scapegoat out of the Christians. Nero notoriously was using Christians as human torches for his sports events, and he was burning Christians alive to illuminate the sports events. That's the kind of thing that Nero was doing, and this is Paul's in prison at this time, so it was not exactly easy to be a Christian, and he needed a lot of courage. And Paul knew that he probably wasn't going to live much longer I have finished the race, he says in verse 7. It's up now. He's expecting, although he's been delivered from the lions, verse 17, so far he's expecting to be thrown to the lions or to be beheaded or something in the very near future. So it's not easy to be a Christian in Rome, but you need to dare to follow when it's challenging, not just when it's easy. Jesus warned us in Matthew 24 verse 12, he said, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of many will grow cold. We're seeing a bit of that beginning in our own country. It's getting harder to be a Christian. And we need to dare to keep following, to be courageous for Jesus. Jesus put it very bluntly to his followers in all ages. In Matthew 10, he says this. He says, don't be afraid, folks. He says, my followers, don't be afraid of those who can kill you. Don't worry about that. Be afraid of the one who can destroy you in hell, he said. That's what he said. He says, if you want to know about commitment, I say you follow me no matter how hard it is, because the alternative is awful. That's how Jesus put it. He says, stay with me. Dare to follow when it's challenging. Demas didn't dare. The third thing is, plan to live in the light of the future. Plan to live in the light of the future. This evening I'm going to begin a series on this kind of theme. But just touching this just now. Plan to live in the light of the future. Don't just live for now. Demas, verse 10 says, he deserts Paul because he loves this world. And actually what it literally says is because he loves this age. It's about the time. He loves now, says Paul. His focus is on now. He's not thinking about the future. Because his focus is on now, because he's short-term in his thinking, short-sighted in his thinking, seeing now and his situation now and the things he wants to do now and his family and his friends and his business interests or whatever, because he's focused on that, he's forgetting about the future, says Paul. He loves the world now, the present age, he says. I wonder if anyone here who wears glasses remembers getting your first pair of glasses. For me, it happened so long ago. You know, I wear contact lenses, so I got my first pair of glasses when I was younger than Nathan. I was just a wee boy of 4, I think, when I got my first glasses. So I don't remember this, but maybe if you're a bit older, you'll remember getting your first pair of glasses. Remember what it was like? After years of the distant things being kind of fuzzy, you get your first pair of glasses, and for the first time you put them on. How do you do it? Wow. You go outside of the opticians and, my word, you can see way down the street. Well, you can read the newspaper on the other side of the road. It's amazing. You can see the top of that hill. Or in Donald's profession, you can see the stags running about a mile away. Great. Fantastic. I love it when I get, my prescription is pretty much the same these days, but in the past it used to be getting worse all the time. And every time I get new contact lenses, things would become sharp as a pin again. And I just love that, getting the new contact lenses. Oh, brilliant. I can see sharp again. I can see in the distance again. And the far off things, of course, are always there. It's just you can't see them because your eyesight isn't good. But when you get your glasses, you can see clearly. And this is the problem with Demas. The distant things of Christ and his kingdom, he's not seen them anymore. He's needing a fresh spiritual prescription, if you like. He's not taking into account the things that are distant, the things that are far off. What we need to do is not live for now, just. It's important to be in now. But we need to have a focus on the future as well. Paul says Demas loves this world. He's loving now. That's what it literally means. He loves this present age, is what he sees. And that's why he's lost his commitment. He's got so caught up with his stuff now, the worldly things of now, that he's stopped looking into the distance at what's coming, at the kingdom of heaven and the glories to be. He's lost that vision. I wonder how clear your vision is today of the glories of God's kingdom to come. And do you live in the light of that? That's what Paul is telling us we should do. Finally, love. Love what lasts forever. Love what lasts forever. It says in verse 10, Demas loves this world. He wants to hold on to what he's got now. And he's letting his love for what he has now eclipse his love for the better things that will be his at Christ's appearing. In verse 8, Paul says, he longs for the appearing of Christ. In fact, it actually literally is, he loves Christ's appearing. That's what it actually says. He loves Christ's appearing. He loves what's coming. It's not just that he loves this present world and the things in it. No, he loves Christ's appearing. And he loves what lasts forever. John writes this in 1 John 2. He says, do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. The world and its desires pass away, says John, but the man who does the will of God lives forever. If you cling in love to what is passing, your home, your garden, your car, your job, your money, while losing a love for what lasts forever, you will be disappointed. You will become cynical and hopeless. And I just wonder what it was like for Demas after he deserted Paul. I guess Demas went away and became a pygmy. Became a Christian who was a shadow of what he had been before. Because he loved the present world. I've just finished reading a really moving book. It's written by a Scottish writer, Andrew Gregg. And it's really his tribute to the Scottish poet Norman Macaigh. It's a really beautiful and moving book. And as he comes to the end of the book, he describes the end of Norman Macaigh's life. Norman Macaigh was an atheist. And he didn't live for anything but the present world. He made that very clear. And Andrew Gregg describes the end of Norman Macaigh's life. Now, Norman Macaigh's poetry is fantastic. It was quoted this week in the high school end of session sediment. It's beautiful. But he says this. He's looking at a photograph of Norman Macaigh taken just a few weeks before he died. And he's really failed, Norman Macaigh. And Andrew Gregg says this. He says, when I was a teenager reading the poems of Macaigh and the Weekend Scotsman, I loved his celebration of the natural world, his delight at being in the world. But as Macaigh aged, Gregg says, his losses started to pile up, and mine were just beginning. And then I saw the dark outline around nearly everything he wrote. His celebrations became elegies. The dark border got thicker towards the end, and the light more hedged in, circumscribed. And that has reflected my outlook as the years go by, the losses grow. So here he is in the photograph, says Gregg. Ravaged, this ravaged, aged man near the end. His friends are gone. AK is long dead. Kitty and Flora, Charlie Ross, Polachan, Chris Greaves, Sidney Goodsir Smith, his sister, now his wife. His heart is not good. He cannot walk any distance. He is kept going mainly by pills. It's many years since he has been able to go far from the car and the road into the hills he loved and to the lochs he once fished. All that is left is memory, and it brings as much pain as pleasure. There really is little light left. That is what happens at the end of your life if you have not lived with commitment to Jesus Christ. There really is little light left. If you do not aspire to be like the best Christians you know, if you do not dare to follow when it's difficult, if you do not plan plan to live in the light of the future, if you do not love what lasts forever, then when you come, like McCaig, near the end, there really is little light left. For Paul, well, there really is glorious light. He says in verse 7, I've finished the race, I've fought, I've kept the faith. Now there is in store for me, he says, the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, not only to me, but also all who have longed for or loved his appearing. There's so much light. The reward of commitment to Jesus Christ, of loving God. Nothing to be ashamed of. I have kept the faith. I have fought the good fight. That is how a person ends who has lived in commitment to Jesus Christ. If you don't do that, there will come a day when there really will be very little light left. If you do that, if you aspire, if you dare, if you plan, if you love, you will look forward to greater light, the crown of righteousness. Commitment has its reward. Loving this present world as Demas did, deserting Christ, leaves little light at the end. Jesus Christ gave his life for your sins. Jesus Christ was committed to laying down his life for you, so that, following him, you could live in the light. And as the proverb says, the path of the righteous is like the first light of day, shining ever brighter till the full light of noon. Walk in that path in commitment to Jesus Christ, and you will have light now and always. We're going to close now by singing from Psalm 37. This is in the Red Book, from verse 34 to 40. 37 and verse 34 to 40. Psalm 37 from verse 34 to verse 40. It really says what we've been saying. Put your trust in the Lord. He will exalt you to inherit the land. You'll see when the wicked are slain, it says. So let's stand and sing from the end of Psalm 37, verse 34 to 40, to God's praise.
us pray.
And now go in peace, and may God's power and glory rest upon you, giving you light and giving you strength to be committed to Him, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, now and always. Amen.